afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, Americana and Roots singer Miko Marks talks about her residency at Yoshi's and a new blues album she has in the works. Then playwright and actor Ted Land asks if Shakespeare is the true author of his iconic plays and poetry. Today we're Shakespearing and shaking it up to some good music. That's all coming up. Stay with us. The Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden, right here on KALW 91.7 FM. And that song you hear is by Miko Marks and the Resurrectors. The Oakland-based singer debuted onto the music scene as a country artist, but she has a vocal range that stretches from here to the Empire State Building. Blues, folk, gospel, rock. I'm telling y'all, Miko's powerful voice will touch your soul, and I try not to miss her live performances because she is so good. Miko currently has a residency at Yoshi's in Oakland, and her next show is Thursday, May 21st. That's next week. And her special guest for that show is going to be Bay Area jazz legend Faye Carroll. Get your tickets now because her last show sold out. And here with me in studio is the Miss Miko Marks. Hey, Miko!
Hey, Janae. Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure with you.
Yeah, I love talking to you. I'm such a fan of yours. And I was like, Miko's here. You're like, Janae, calm down.
No.
It's just me. But I just love your voice, and I just think you're just such a great artist. And like I said, anytime you're doing a show in Oakland or San Francisco, I'm trying to be there because just...
Thank you.
Yeah, hearing you perform is a treat. So... I first learned of you as a country artist,
yes,
like we all have. And so there was an interview you did with the website called rockmommy.com, and you said you're more of an Americana. You're not really, you don't want to just put yourself in the country artist box. So why is that? Why did the switch to America? Is the switch to Americana the evolvement of Americana?
I think it's more of the evolving thing that happened for me, because when I first started out, I was really enthralled with country music. I loved it so much from a little girl. I mean, I just loved Loretta Lynn. I loved Patsy Cline. Mm-hmm. I loved so many people that did country music when I was growing up, which was in the early 70s. I was really taken by the music because of the storytelling.
Right.
So as a kid, I was like, oh, this is a good story. Whatever she is going through, I feel it. Mm-hmm. I could feel the pulse of the heart through the music by the way it was being transmitted.
Yeah.
And country was known for its storytelling, and so I latched on at a very young age. So when I got to be older and trying to do my own thing, which I was a late bloomer, I didn't start pursuing a music career until I was into my mid-20s. Mm-hmm. That's late. I found out that's late. But I decided I wanted to do country, and I just had this... I guess you would say I was just wide-eyed. I was just like half full glass. I was like, oh, if you're good, you're going to make it. Well, it turns out it does not matter how good you are.
Oh, I know. I know that even in the journalism industry. I know what you're talking about. And I know we talked about this before. Yes. I know what you're saying.
But I love the music, and I still do. I'm more of a traditional country music lover. You know, I go back to Waylon Jennings. I go back to Kenny Loggins when he was doing country. Mm. Even Ray Charles had a country album.
And,
you know, I got a chance to meet Charlie Pride on a Grand Ole Opry cruise, and that was amazing.
Oh, wow.
He gave me the thumbs up for my country, so, and I immortalized it in a...
Oh, I know you did.
I did.
In your brain, it's like on a shelf.
Yes,
like
I have
frame.
That memory in a frame.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So Americana, so what does that mean for you?
Americana for me means it's like a melting pot, really, of several genres, if you want to say. Like there's blues, there's country, there's some rock, there's this it's just a gumbo of all different styles of music. It's not pigeonholed as much as like, okay, you're doing country or you're doing R&B.
Yeah.
There's a place for roots music, which is kind of like the foundation of all these other tentacles that came out, like rock, like jazz, like all these other genres. It's the base, it's roots music.
Yeah.
And I feel like my sound lends itself to that moniker, if you're going to have one. Yeah. It lends itself to the Americana category more than anything.
You know, and I know, again, you're so great. And I've heard you sing those different types of music when I've gone to your shows. And I know, too, you know, country, there's more discussion over the years, definitely because of people like you and your friend, singer, Reese Palmer.
Yes.
And you all have brought the light up. To light about what's the prejudices that you all are dealing with as far as being black artists in country. And so now I'm seeing the shift to Americana or it's broadening. Because, like I said, your voice, Miko's voice has range. Has embracing yourself more as Americana and roots singer, has that opened more doors for you? Has that even, made you grow as an artist when it comes to creating?
I think for me, I wouldn't say it opened more doors, but it allowed me to feel more free as far as the music that I'm putting out. I don't feel like I need to stick to a certain road. There are many roads you can take in Americana, and I don't feel restricted or limited in how I want to deliver my music. And so I'm able to bring in all the influences that I've had over the many years into that space. Yeah. And let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah. You know? And I'm thinking influences. I'm thinking you're from Flint, Michigan. You live in Oakland now.
Yes.
And you went to Grambling. So there's HBCUs. Yes. And being a mom. And just, yeah. Because you're a storyteller in your music.
I am. And I all those things you just mentioned are big pieces of who I am sitting before you today.
Yeah.
Like growing up in Flint, Michigan, I grew up in Flint before the automotive industry actually left the town, like all the jobs left the town. So my family was really thriving and the city was thriving. So when I left at 17 to go attend Grambling State University, I left and things were still in good shape. As the years went by in college was when all the automotive industry jobs were leaving. And so the city has just been devastated since.
Yeah.
There's been no replacement of economy. There's been no rebuild. The water system is still not where it needs to be. And I wrote a song about that called We Are Here, which was on the Our Country
album.
Right,
I remember that, yeah.
And I was just like, you know, I was just home last August in Flint to bury my sister, and I was just saddened because it's like a forgotten city.
Yeah.
And my entire family is still there, but they're still showing light and joy in their hearts and resilience. And, you know, some of them were able to retire from the automotive industry, so they didn't get off scot-free.
Right. No, and my condolences to you on the passing of your sister.
Thank you.
How are they accessing clean water then?
They're working on the water. There's a lot of bottled water going on.
Okay.
There's a lot of boiling of water. It's not at the stage that it was when it was first found out. There's been some repairs, but there's still much work to do.
Right.
You know, there's still lots of work to do.
And I know, too, we've talked about this before. This is an issue not just in Flint. This is an issue in different parts of the country as well. However, at the same time, when we look at oppressed people going through things like this, it's just always amazing how people are still able to tap into joy and to just say, you know, I got to go forward and have some quality of life. Yeah,
absolutely. I keep my world small and I let it out. Whatever I'm feeling, my angst, my anxiety, my fear, I let it out through the music because that's what I have to give and what I have to give myself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Can we play the song since she's talking about that? Can we play the song Trouble? Because that feels like
yes.
Yeah, can we play that? All right, let's hear Trouble for Miko Marks.
Looking for
All right, that was the song Trouble by Meeko Marks. I'm thinking of John Lewis. You said yes. to that good trouble. There's so much going on in the world. So much going on.
I'm like, John, please give us words of wisdom. Come and help us right now. Through the ancestral tube of information, bring us some guidance.
Some guidance. Yeah. Some wisdom.
Yes.
Yes. It's a lot going on. But there's some good things going on, too, as well.
Absolutely.
There's some good things going on. It's funny because with this show, Meeko, you know, one of my intentions with doing this show was in light of everything happening, because I knew it was going to launch around when, you know, everything's happening.
Yeah.
I was like, I still want to balance, you know, having joy, you know, keeping it real about the issues happening, but also to balance joy and lifting up artists like yourself, because arts and artists are so important right
Thank
now.
Thank you.
Yeah. You guys are, I mean, that kind of, I listen to that when I'm like, you know, you guys are getting us through this.
It's about, now is the time for all artists to really lean in and speak their truth through the music. And that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to feel more joy than I feel more pain. You know what I mean? I'm trying to highlight the positive than the negative, even though there's negative all around.
Yeah.
That's the way I'm going to stay grounded.
Yeah. And it's not like ignoring the negative.
No.
But also kind of like what your family's doing, you know, dealing with the water, but also to making space, you know, for joy.
Yes.
And that's a form of resistance too as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And you, speaking of joy, I was so excited for you when you appeared at the Grand Ole Opry. That was 2023?
That was 2020.
I think
it was 2022. Three.
Yeah.
I think it was. It might have been 2022. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's still a blur to me. I almost really have a fog around it happening because it happened so quickly and how it happened.
Yes,
was just
tell us. Because I saw the video how it happened. Tell us how it happened.
So I'm going to give you the long story version.
Okay.
So my friend Reese, she had been on Reese Palmer. She had been on the Opry years before and 2008 or something.
And she's also to a fabulous country singer.
Yes, she's amazing.
Yeah.
And so at the time, we were like the only two black women doing country music together, side by side, not, you know, like along the same trajectory.
Yeah.
And so when she got her Opry debut, I didn't know her at the time, but I felt an urge to send her flowers, you know, just to let her know that I saw her and I was proud of her.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did that, and after that, we just became fast friends because she was like, who is this person sending me? She was like, she did. And so we became friends. And so she called me and was like, hey, the Opry wants me to come. Can you come sing backgrounds for me? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, girl, yes. Anytime I can get on that stage, I don't have to stand in the circle. And then she was like, just come sing backgrounds. And then after we sang the song, she said, Meeko, what are you going to sing at your Opry debut on October 14th?
And this was on stage.
On stage. She did not tell me anything. I was floored when she announced me from the stage, and I was standing outside the circle, and I got in that circle on October 14th. I sure did.
I saw the look on your face when she said it. You were like, what?
I was really surprised. She did so well keeping that secret. I don't know if I could have kept it because I would have been so excited. I was like, girl, you going to be on the Opry? But she didn't do it. She kept it, and I still got a side eye to her for it. But I love her indeed.
What a good friend. What was it like for you to be on the stage that first time when you performed and it was your show?
You know, it was a flood of emotions. There was like this jubilation. You know, I was just super excited, but I was off. Also very emotional because it was something I wanted since I was a little girl.
Right.
And it seemed so unattainable at the time when I was little. It just seemed like I was dreaming too big. But I want to say, you can never dream too big. You know, you can never dream too big.
Hey.
And so it happened. And I'm like, you actually played the Opry. And now I've been back there maybe four times.
Wow.
And so, because once you get in, they be like, come on back, come on back, which is beautiful. And yeah, I'll never forget that because it was just surreal.
Yeah, I was so happy for you when I saw that because I knew that was a dream. I mean, that's every country singer's dream is to play at the
Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah,
it's the Mecca of country music as far as like one of the places, the Opry and the Ryman, which is where the Grand Ole Opry started.
Mm.
The Ryman is another one, the Mother Church. And so I've had a chance to do both.
Wow. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with the soulful Oakland Americana root singer, Miko Marks. And she has a residency at Yoshi's with show dates through August. So get your tickets now because she's been selling out. And her next show date is next Thursday, May 21st. And I will be there. I already got my ticket. Because I said, I can't miss Miko Marks. Let me tell y'all something about Miko. When she goes on stage, Miko, her beautiful long locks, and she always has a beautiful dress, you know, definitely giving that Americana roots country feel. Miko would just gracefully and humbly walk on stage and gently, you know, pick up the microphone, and then her voice will just blow you away. Honey, my wig was on the floor by the end of your show. My wig and my cowgirl hat was on the floor, and I was in tears.
You know, you are not the only one to tell me that. It's so funny because my whole thing is about, it's not me. I'm just the vessel. I've been gifted a gift.
It's whatever's coming through you, because your voice is so powerful. It's so powerful.
Thank you.
And beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, yeah, what's going through your mind when you... And then it's like, it's kind of a sucker punch because you know what so... You know, you're not... Like, the first time I heard you, I was like, what? I was not expecting. That's why I said I was in tears. My wig was on the floor. My cowboy hat was somewhere else. I was like, this is... Because your music just... It moves me. So, what's going through your mind? So, you know, you're the vessel.
Yeah.
When you get on that stage, you about to tear it up.
Well, I know for a fact that when I was little singing in church... People would fall out and cry and do all these things. And I was maybe, what, 6, 8, you know, and it was scary. And so I shied away from singing. But what I do know is that over the years, I've learned to embrace the gift that I've been given. Mm-hmm. So me and my band, we pray before every show to be used, taken out of ourselves and be used by something greater than us to touch the people.
Yeah.
And so... That's probably what you get when I come through there like that. I'm not really in self. I'm trying to give you what I was given to give out. And it's big.
Yeah.
It's big.
It is. Let's hear some more of Miko's music. Let's hear, because, you know, we talked about Flint, Michigan, your hometown. You live in Oakland now. We talked about Flint, Michigan. So feel like coming home, feel like going home. Is that about home, Flint?
Flint, feel like going home is just about a return to myself, you know? And it's like I've been doing this for many years, and I feel like now's the time for me to, you know, take up my place at home, you know, and really be rooted and grounded in what I'm doing. I started working with Red Tone Records, and I had stopped recording music for like 15 years. Yeah. And I came back to these guys, Justin Phipps and Steve Wireman, and they were like music aficionados. Like, these guys are just the best producers, the best songwriters, and something is in the water that they're drinking because it's golden. And everything that we've done together has been really anointed with this just love of music. And you can hear it. You
know? And they're out of San Jose, right?
They are out of East Palo Alto.
Okay.
East Palo Alto, nice. Yeah. And a bunch of my band members are from the South Bay. But I had played with them when I first started in 2005. They were in my band. But it's really a small town kind of vibe of people that have known each other for years, that know each other, and that's how the music is being created.
And that's the vibe I get in your music, because it does feel like home.
Yeah.
Let's listen to that. Feel like going home.
Away. Will that
Feel Like Going Home by Miko Marx, the Oakland Americana roots singer, and she is so soulful and so good. She has a residency at Yoshi's with show dates through August, but get your tickets now because her show has been selling out. And her next show, which I will be at, is next Thursday, May 21st, and her special guest will be Faye Carroll. Okay, you music artists, y'all are doing residencies. I remember the first time I even heard about a music artist doing a residency was when Celine Dion did hers in Vegas. And yes, now we're seeing them not just on the Strip. Usually we'd hear about them on the Vegas Strip. They're at Yoshi's. You know, there are different venues across the country. So what's up with the residencies?
This is my first residency I have ever had in my life.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As far as posting up somewhere once a month for a run of shows. And residencies, they vary. You could be posted up for a week, 2 weeks. You know, yeah. I just so happen to have one with Yoshi's once a month. And shout out to Yoshi's and thank you for having me, because it's a blessing to be able to play at home and just leave your house and just roll down the street and sleep in your own bed. So I don't take it lightly. But this is my first residency, and we had our first show last month. And as I was in the dressing room, one of the managers came to me, Robert, and he was like, I just want you to know you just sold out. We had to turn some people away. And I was like, oh, my God. So to sell out at home is just, it's just a gift. And I was just filled with joy, and I still am about it.
Yeah, because you're on the road a lot. So sometimes I see shows, and I'm like, I can't make that. So it's nice that you're able to do a show, like, right in Oakland.
Yes, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
And to have the people come out like they did, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is some real love here.
Oh,
and so I had to do it to them.
So I feel bad for those people that missed out. You know, they had to be turned away, but at least they can come back to
they
the
can
show.
Come back.
Yeah,
absolutely.
For next week and then July, August. So tell us, like, what about this upcoming show? What can we expect? I mean, Faye Carroll is a legend, jazz legend.
Faye Carroll is one of my most favorite people, and she's always been in my corner showing love. And I just felt like each show is going to have a different guest, and I just was like, I gotta have Faye Carroll because she is just a legend, a Bay Area legend in her music. She just had an album drop too, a new jazz album, and so I'm really grateful and excited to have her perform and be a part of something I'm doing, because she always asks me, hey Miko, come and do something with me. Well, this is my turn to be like, come do something with me,
right,
girl.
Yeah, because I've seen you guys perform together. Yeah. Who else can we expect in case people can't make it next week? But
so
who
if
else?
You can't make it next week, which I know you can.
Y'all can
but,
make it.
But if you can't make it next week, in June, we have Tiffany Marie from Artelia Green. She's a conscious, uplifting, just beautiful human and artist, and you will guarantee get your soul fed. And then we also have Dr. Ree LaViolette, The poet.
Yeah.
Guru.
Yeah. Ree LaViolette is brilliant poet. It's such a sweet soul.
Yes.
And so she'll be June, and then Tiffany is...
Tiffany's June as well.
Okay. They're both in June. Okay.
Yeah,
they're going to both be at that show?
Yes.
Oh, man. I might have to go to June show, too.
And then we have Red Tone artist Kiazi Malonga. On the show coming up too. He's a Congolese drummer who has the famous dad that has the art center named after him, Malonga Art Center in Oakland.
Yeah, which is formerly named the Alice Art Center.
So we got some good stuff in there.
So I'm hearing this music. Okay, so we got poetry, hip hop, because Tiffany's hip hop, right?
Yes.
Okay, so hip hop, poetry, drumming, African drumming.
Yes.
And then roots and country and blues and
Well, there should be no boundaries in music.
Yeah.
There should be no boundaries. Whoever came up with this concept of segregating music in this way, like putting these different pods and monikers on names, that should never have happened. We would all be free-flowing. Not if we didn't have genres, we would all be free-flowing and enjoying.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what this residency is about. It's kind of like taking off the wall, you know, just taking off the locks. Be free. So there's African drumming, there's hip hop, there's poetry, there's country, there's blues, there's gonna be jazz. I mean, there's all these things.
Yeah. Wow, Miko, this is going to be a great show.
I think so.
This is going to be a great, great show. So, and there's several shows, so people can go to more than one. People like Janae Darden. No, I would be at more than one because I'm a fan. But you have a blues out, and I love blues. I said, I know. Did I read this correctly when I got the email? I was like, Miko Marx is working on a blues album?
Yes. And full disclosure, when I grew up, I didn't like blues.
Really?
I did not like it because I was a kid, first of all, mm-hmm. and they were always talking about, you know, sad things,
yeah.
you know, cheating and, you know, not having any money. And it was all these downtrodden subjects. And I was like, I don't like that music.
Yeah.
Fast forward to a person who has lived.
Oh, yeah. And, you know the blues.
Yeah, I know the blues. And yeah. I've experienced some blues and situations in my own life that really let me put my heart and soul into this album that we just finished. It'll be coming out on my birthday, hopefully in October.
Nice.
But it's done and it's beautiful, and I'm so glad that I didn't let the fact that I didn't know much about the genre mm-hmm. to stop me from pouring my heart and soul into it, because really the blues is gospel, which I know very well.
Right.
It's just a different conversation.
Yeah, it's just a different conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. When my grandma played blues in the kitchen, I knew we were going to get some collard greens.
Oh, okay. So, or some black eyed peas.
Right, some black eyed peas.
Yes.
So when I heard blues in the kitchen, I was like, I know that music was sad. I said, but it's going to be a good meal after following that.
Yes.
Following that music. Wow, that is so exciting. Okay, we only have 3 minutes left.
It's been so good. It went by so fast.
I knew it would. I said it's going to go by so fast. And I have 2 more questions for you, but we'll have to have you back on another time. Okay, so you brought a book.
Yes.
That you wanted to mention for the folks out there. A beautiful
yes.
children's book.
I just got this book yesterday, and I said, what perfect timing. So it's a book called Color Me Country, and it was edited by Kelly McCartney and Reese Palmer, illustrated by Rihanna Giddens.
Nice.
And so this this book highlights some of the women that paved the way in country music, and I just so happen to be second on the end on the cover. And it's just a beautiful children's book, a tribute to the women in this book. And we want to educate our kids, since they're trying to take a lot of the books away. We want to keep the people of color stories being told.
Yeah.
And this is part of that, and I'm excited to share it with y'all. So if you need this book in your life,
okay.
If you need this book, you can get it on bookshop.org.
Oh, wonderful. Bookshop is great. I buy yes. a lot of my books from there. And Color Me Country, that's Reese Palmer's podcast too, right?
Yes.
The title of the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is a great podcast if you just want to learn more about just diversity.
Yes.
You know, in country, and just different types of artists who are in country.
Yeah,
music.
She highlights marginalized artists that
yeah.
some people you wouldn't even know about, but you would fall in love with.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I listen to her podcast too as well. Are you still roller skating? Because I know aside from singing and
well, once I started touring, I took the skates off because I was like, you might hurt yourself and then you can't do these shows.
Okay.
But I stay tapped in with my roller skating crew, the Oakland Rollers. I stay tapped in with them, and every now and then, every blue moon, I'll go out there with my skates
yeah.
and skate around. They do a big event every Thursday over at Defermery Park. It's skater galore
okay.
out there, so you can always just pop in and skate.
Yeah, well, you told me that's it. You're out here skating.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, what does it mean for you to be performing this residency at Yoshi's? Because Yoshi's is such a just iconic
it's just,
venue.
Yeah. It's a legendary venue, and everybody, you say Yoshi's, everybody knows what you're talking about
yeah.
and where you're talking about. So to be able to do that with my music, something that has been hard to perform when I was doing traditional country, it was kind of
yeah.
hard for me to find my way in the Bay, but I'm able to, through Americana, I'm able to bring in everybody. It doesn't matter what you're listening to, you're going to hear something you love.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's kind of cool to be able to just play right at home, because it's nice. It's
and
nice to not go anywhere.
And to sell out.
Yeah.
And to sell out. So I'm glad Yoshi's is doing this and having these residencies for local artists.
I am really, really grateful for it, because I don't know if I would have been able to post up anywhere else
right.
and do this. So it's kind of awesome. I'm meeting new people,
yeah.
new fans, new friends.
Yeah, I was going to say this is going to introduce you to new people.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, I'm so happy you came by.
I am too.
Yeah, because the last time we talked was 2021. So
we were overdue.
Yeah, so we were overdue. And congratulations on everything. I just,
thank
like I
you.
Said, I love your music. And And just your music just lifts my spirits. And I know for your fans, they feel the same. So thank
you.
Well,
I'm going to say one quick thing.
Yeah,
you are amazing. Oh, congratulations on your 1 hour extension of the 6 minutes. I'm so happy for you. And all I see is the best happening going forward.
Ah, thank you. We in it together, girl.
Absolutely.
Raise your hands. Yes. We in it together. All right. See Miko Marks during her residency at Yoshi's in Jack London Square. Her next show date is Thursday, May 21st, and will feature special guest Faye Carroll. Coming up, was Shakespeare the true author of his great works? A Love Boat legend asked this question in a new production. Actor and playwright Ted Lange joins me next. We'll be back. Listening to the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden, on KALW 91.7 FM. These days, people may read an article or a book and ask, was this written by AI? But long before AI existed, some people have questioned if William Shakespeare actually authored all of the great plays and poetry he is known for. Playwright and Oakland native Ted Lange addresses this old conspiracy in Shakespeare Over My Shoulder. The play is a production of the African-American Shakespeare Company. Now, black actors would play well-known Elizabethan writers and societal figures, while a white actor would play Shakespeare. Mr. Lange is known and beloved for playing the bartender Isaac Washington in The Love Boat, but he also studied Shakespeare at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts in London. Shakespeare Over My Shoulder, I feel so dramatic because of the music, opens this Friday at the 533 Sutter Street Theater in San Francisco. And here's my conversation with Mr. Ted Lange. Mr. Ted Lange, welcome.
Thank you very much, Janae.
I'm so glad you are here. We have so much to talk about. Okay.
Yes.
So let's dig into it. Okay. So I want to know, when was the first time you were introduced to Shakespeare's work, and what did you think?
I was 14 years old. I'm from Oakland. I don't know if you know that. I'm from the Bay Area.
I know you're from Oakland. Well, yeah, let's go back there. Where are you from in Oakland? Where'd you grow up in Oakland?
Yeah, North Oakland.
North Oakland.
I went to a junior high school called Golden Gate Junior High School.
Yes.
When I was 14, I did the Shakespearean play Macbeth.
Okay.
And my teacher let me play the lead. I played Macbeth. Now, the reason he did that was I was the guy that sat in the class and always did the jokes.
Okay.
I was the guy that the teacher would say something and I could see the joke in it.
Uh-huh.
And so in order to shut me up, he first cast me in A Christmas Carol about Ebenezer Scrooge.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're sitting in a room with 30 people making them laugh. But then when you got 500 making them laugh and they're your fellow classmates,
right,
you know, that's really drunken power.
Right.
And so my teacher came to me after that. He says, you know, Ted, we're going to do Macbeth later on in the semester. So, oh, man, great. He said, I want you to be Macbeth. Wow, really? He goes, yeah. He says, but if you crack one joke in my class, I'm going to give that part to Donald Germany. And I said, not Donald Germany.
Not Donald Germany.
No, you got to give it to me. He said, well, then I don't want you making jokes in my class. And so that's what I did. I didn't make any jokes in his class. It was really difficult, but the other classes that I took, I was relentless.
Okay. You were like, okay.
Yeah, now I'm going to let everything out now.
Out.
But that's my first introduction at 14.
Okay.
Then I went to high school, and I was 16, and we did the same play again, Macbeth, mm-hmm, only this time I played Macbeth's best friend, Banquo. And then years later, I went to my first Shakespeare Festival, Colorado Shakespeare Festival, did the play again.
Okay.
So I really liked it because I saw that it can be interpreted different ways.
Right.
And one of the things that I try to do is I try to introduce black audiences to Shakespeare, and hopefully they get the same love that I have for Shakespeare. They, you know, so I directed Hamlet in Los Angeles, South Central, with Glenn Turman as Hamlet. And I did
when
it.
When was that?
1978.
Oh, wow.
1970. Now, they got some
Glenn
black
Turner
guy.
From a different world. Yeah. Yeah. From a different world.
Yeah,
fabulous
yeah. They
actor.
Got a black guy doing it now at the in England. And they're saying, well, this is the first time a black guy has ever done it. We did it in 78.
You also, in the 60s. You played Romeo in a production of Romeo and Juliet in San Francisco.
Yes, yeah.
And while doing research for that role, you found out that there's been debate that Shakespeare may now have written all of his plays. And I read that people such as Freud, Mark Twain, Helen Keller, Charlie Chaplin, they also thought he didn't write his plays and his poems. When you learned that you love Shakespeare, how did you feel?
I was mad. I didn't believe it. But then they got these books, and you start reading, and I said, no, that's not true.
Yeah.
I did a lecture at Mark Twain's house, as a matter of fact.
Okay, I've been there.
In Hartford.
Uh-huh.
And I did a lecture, because I wrote a prequel to Othello. And in my lecture, I say there is a possibility that he didn't write all of the plays. Mm-hmm. That was part of my lecture. Mm-hmm. And this guy came up to me after. He said, my thesis was Edward de Vere. That was a nobleman, a royal guy.
Okay.
That could have written it. And this is in my play, Shakespeare Over My Shoulder, this moment.
Okay.
And so this guy came up to me and says it wasn't de Vere, it was Marlowe.
There's so many names I've read.
Yeah.
Where people think that's who wrote it. That's men and women.
And so I said, Marlowe? He says, yes. Because I was lecturing to Shakespearean scholars. Mm-hmm. He said, here's my book on Marlowe. Read it. And you'll see that de Vere didn't do it. Marlowe did it. And then the guy left me with his book. And another guy came up to me and said, I know so-and-so. Don't listen to him. It wasn't Marlowe. It was Francis Bacon. Here's my book.
Oh, my goodness.
On Francis Bacon.
Francis Bacon was a philosopher.
Yeah, yeah.
Edward de Vere, like you said, poet.
A scientist, poet.
Yeah,
he was
Francis
all of
Bacon
these things.
Was a scientist, yeah.
He was a knight. And so I read these books, and they're both valid arguments for their guy. And so I said, this is really a play. Mm-hmm. I can do a play with de Vere, Marlowe, and Bacon, and then the character of Shakespeare. And that's how I came up with Shakespeare Over My Shoulder. I put all the information from these books into this play. But what I also did was, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to take educational information,
yeah.
I did it in a comedic vein. So that you're getting educated, but you're also getting entertained. So it's comedy with this idea that maybe someone else wrote it.
Now, do you think?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I'm going to give you an example right now.
Okay.
Everyone agrees that Othello was based on a novel by a guy named Cynthio.
Okay.
The novel's called Hecatomithi. And it was an Italian novel. It was very popular in Italy and Venice.
And it's an Italian author.
Italian author.
Okay.
Cynthio is Italian. Okay. Well, if the novel was popular in Italy and everybody in Italy knew it, and Shakespeare never went to Italy, the novel never came out of Italy. The novel never made it to England.
Yeah, because I understand he never left England.
He never left London.
Oh, he never left London.
Yeah, yeah. He Stratford and London. London and Stratford. That's what he did. Okay, so if he didn't speak Italian, he didn't read Italian, he never left London, the novel never came to London, how did he write this book?
And I read, too, that I was on biography.com and history.com. I was just reading all kind of things about this. And so I read that some people questioned his education.
Yes.
He did not attend university.
Yes.
So some people are saying, they're arguing that he wouldn't have learned the languages, grammar, vocabulary to even write what he wrote. And then to None of the letters and business documents that survived after he died give any hint that he was an author, let alone a famous one at the time. And these are, like I said, these are arguments that some people have made over the years.
And that's part of what I've worked into this play about him.
Yeah.
So if you come and see the play, you're going to learn a whole lot about Shakespeare. You're going to have a good laugh. I promise you this. I got four wonderful actors.
Okay.
I got an actor named Ron Rice, who's playing Marlowe, Nick Moore, who's playing Shakespeare, Michael Anthony Brown, who's playing Edward de Vere, and Gary Moore, who's playing Francis Bacon. These four guys are wonderful. And they're doing an exceptional job. And I promise you, if you come in, you see the play, you're going to have a good time.
So is the play, is it they're in?
It's during the pandemic.
Okay.
It's during the plague.
Yeah, there's a plague.
So you'll get COVID.
You get COVID memories.
Yeah. You know, because it was the plague and people couldn't, associate. But it all takes place in a tavern, an English tavern. And I set it in a tavern called the White Hart Tavern, which is over 200 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's been around a long time. At that time, it was 200 years old.
Okay.
So.
Wow.
This
was in the 1500s, right?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're getting history, but at the same time, you're getting in a way that it's not so historically boring.
Yeah, historical fiction.
Yeah. Historical fiction, but it's entertaining.
Yeah.
And that's my whole deal. And then you're going to find out all about Marlowe. You're going to find out all about Shakespeare. You're going to find out all about De Vere and their background. Like, if you saw Hamnet, that's fictitious.
Mm-hmm.
My play tells you what really happened. He didn't want to marry Anne Hathaway. That was his wife he had three kids with.
Right. Shakespeare.
Yeah, Shakespeare. He wanted to marry a girl named Anne Whatley, and he got a marriage license. But his father stopped him. And his father stopped him because the girl went to the father. Because he told the girl, I'm not going to marry you. I'm going to marry this other Anne. And the girl said, no, you're not. You know, and she's older. He's 17. She's 25.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's smarter than he is. He's 17. He gets to be with a naked woman. You know what I mean? She got pregnant. So she goes to the father and says, I'm carrying his baby. Father says, he don't want to marry me. Oh, well, we'll take care of that baby.
Wow.
Yeah. See, that stuff, people don't know that.
And you know, it's just the fact that people are debating, and for years people have been debating if Shakespeare actually authored his work. It's very Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking the drama.
Yeah.
I mean, he was all, whether you think he wrote it or not, he was all about the drama. So even just this scandal, possible scandal, to me is just very Shakespeare.
And as a black person, you say, I know that white boy didn't do all that.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what he did or didn't do.
Well, I see, I liken it to rock and roll.
Yes.
Elvis Presley is the king of rock and roll. But who was behind Elvis Presley? Little Richard.
Yeah.
You know, Fats Domino.
Sister Rosetta Tharpe.
Yeah, Rosetta Tharpe.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They all contributed. So maybe. And that's the way this thing is cast. I got a white actor playing Shakespeare, but I got three black actors like it's rock and roll. Do you know what I mean? I got three actors that are the real literate people. They are the real rock and rollers that this guy says, I like the way you sing your song, and I'm going to sing it just like that.
And that's why Shakespeare's over my shoulder.
Shakespeare, he stands behind me.
While you're writing.
Yes. He's looking over your shoulder. And the whole thing is, I have him do everything an actor does to get a job. Who knows better than me what actors do to get a job? And I put it in the play, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like if I see Denzel, I'll go, hey, man, come on, man, put me in something. If I see, what's the guy's name in Atlanta that's the
Tyler Perry.
Tyler Perry. You don't think Tyler Perry's got some guys over his shoulder going, hey, man, come on. You got six shows here and seven. Give me a gig, man. Come on. You know.
If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with actor and director Ted Lange. You may remember him from The Love Boat. Well, he wrote and directed a new play, Shakespeare Over My Shoulder, and it asks the question if Shakespeare actually wrote the plays and poems he's known for. Shakespeare Over My Shoulder is running May 15th to June 7th at Theater 33, a.k.a. the Shelton Theater. The work is a production of the African-American Shakespeare Company. So some people who feel that Shakespeare did write his work or author his work. So I was looking again on biography.com and they said, quote, there were no public claims during Shakespeare's lifetime that he was acting as a pseudonym. In fact, actors who had performed his plays paid tribute to him in the years following his death and even helped arrange publication of his works, end quote. So I just wanted to show different sides to this argument.
Now, wait, before you go any further.
Okay, go ahead.
The First Folio. I happen to own a facsimile of that, the First Folio. Mm-hmm. Okay, there is a book called Secrets of the World, I think is that's the name of it. But the picture of Shakespeare is really a mask. Have you ever heard this?
I haven't heard. This is all new
to me. Okay, all right. So what they do is they give you information that is hidden. Mm-hmm. So it's like being a Freemason.
Yeah.
Okay, so there you got 33 degrees. We that are not in the club, we don't know what the 33 degrees are or any of that.
Yeah.
But they know. So what they're saying is that the people that were of Shakespeare's time knew that it wasn't him and that they used his image, this image, to produce the plays. And so if you look at the First Folio, there's a book called Francis the First, and that book is written in code. The First Folio, where we get all of the plays from. So you'll see
this feel like espionage
they'll do a sentence and the sentence will have a capital letter in the middle of the word and it'll have this and that. And that's called a bilateral code. And they got coded messages in the First Folio. The second, third, and fourth folio don't have it. It's all standardized. Mm-hmm. But the First Folio has got hidden messages in it.
Isn't
that fascinating?
It's fascinating and creepy at the same time.
Yeah.
Now, you studied at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Yes.
This was during Love Boat or after?
During.
Okay, during.
I worked with an actress named Lynn Redgrave.
Yes, I remember her.
Yes, Lynn Redgrave. I was directing her on Love Boat, and she tossed out a Shakespearean phrase in the middle of rehearsal, and I tossed out a Shakespeare phrase back to her.
Yeah.
She looked. And she said something else, and then I answered her in Shakespeare. And then she said this, and I quoted Richard III. Then she quoted Romeo and Juliet. Then I said, of course, So she said, you should go to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. And I found out that I needed to have a letter of recommendation. And I went to her, and I said, look, I'm checking into this. I need a letter of recommendation. Would you write? She said, of course.
Yeah, she's a well-respected actress. I remember her on so many things during the 80s.
Georgie girl, yeah. And if you just IMDb or Google her, you'll see who she is.
Oh, yeah, I definitely know who she is, and I remember her. When you were at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts, did they talk about this, about Shakespeare? Possibly
no.
Not? Okay.
As a matter of fact, my teacher said to us, Shakespeare never met a Jew, but he wrote Merchant of Venice, which has a prominent Jewish character. Okay?
Okay.
That's what my instructor said to us, to his class. He says, Shakespeare never met a Jew, but he was so this and he was so that he wrote this wonderful Jewish character in Merchant of Venice. Because England kicked out all of the Jews in 1299. However, there's a thing called a Murano. You ever heard of that, Murano?
Mm-mm.
Those are Jews secretly living in England. Secretly living in London. And one of the more famous characters is a guy named Roderico López. He was the physician to Queen Elizabeth.
And then, too, I was reading that there was a woman who, I think her family had converted to Judaism, and some people speculate she may have authored works that...
Yes, there are a number of... Yeah. They even think the Queen wrote some of the plays.
I don't, you know, listeners, you make your own call and judgment on this. Yeah. Because this is tangled and...
It goes in and out and up and down and in and around, you know?
But your play is like, we won't get all tangled up. It'll be funny.
And you can see how they did it.
Yeah.
You know, you can see, here's this actor that needed money. And the guy said, let me put your name on my poem, because at the time, Venus Adonis, it was during the play, Venus Adonis, which is a Shakespearean poem, became very, very popular. When Shakespeare gained his notoriety, it was for that poem, not for any of his plays. Later, he wrote the plays. But Venus and Adonis was a poem, because nobody could go to the theater at this time, 1593.
Yeah.
And what they did was, everybody read this poem. Everybody. But it was messages being sent to the Queen.
Wow. I have, Mr. Lange, I have learned so much today.
Yes.
So much. Yeah. And we were talking about other things before we even started talking about Shakespeare. Yeah. So I have learned so much. Congratulations on your show.
Thank you, Jeanette.
And thank you for making the time to come chat with me today.
My pleasure. A pleasure to meet you.
That was playwright and director Ted Lange. Shakespeare Over My Shoulder opens this Friday at the 533 Sutter Street Theater in San Francisco, and the show runs until June 7th. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, and thank you for tuning in. Make sure you mark your calendars for our next Sights and Sounds event, which is called When We Exhale, an anthology of Black women rooted in ancestral medicine. That's going to be in our downtown San Francisco venue on Thursday, May 28th at 7 p.m. At 220 Montgomery Street. And it's right by the Montgomery BART station. So it's a quick walk, and it's going to be really, really good. Really beautiful poets just talking about rest, talking about intimacy and grief. So definitely make sure you mark your calendars for May 28th. Okay, that's all the time we have. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.